Welcome to another week of Free Basketball. I am your host, Ryan Meadows, and we've got a special one for you this week. No Cody, but it is the best time of year. It is the Grizzlies playoffs, which isn't very much fun, but it does lead us to a top 10 draft pick, which we want to talk about with our resident Grizzlies draft father himself. Chip Williams is here with me. Chip, how you doing?
I'm great, Ryan. Doing great. We had a ton of fun talking about the draft last year. And it doesn't feel like it was that long ago, but it's that time of year again. And a lot more fun, too, because, you know, I think when you and I were doing the podcast, they still had the first round pick. And then they end up trading it for Smart. And so we ended up, you got GG Jackson in the second round. So it turned out great. But much more exciting that, at least at the time of this recording, they still hold the ninth pick in the draft.
Yeah, and hopefully this time there's no actual moving completely out. Maybe we'll have somebody that we can maybe get excited with, at least on draft night. I know it's two nights now, which I don't know why they did that. I'm not looking forward to 4 hours of a first round. But at least we got GG out of it. That was the only plus that came out of that. Didn't realize it until 6 months later, but that was the plus that came out of this draft. But this class, even though we do have a top 10 pick, everybody's talking about it. So, of course, I have to get your opinions about it. I have to be honest with everybody, and I was honest with you. I have not been as interested in this class as I am in the past, at least the past few years. There's a lot of callbacks to 2013, you know, the Anthony Bennett draft, quote unquote, where, what was it, Giannis goes 15 and Rudy Gobert goes 27th or something like that. And it does kind of have that feel to it. Probably why I haven't been as interested as I usually have. Do you have the same kind of feelings about the weakness of it? Or you're just, no matter it's draft time, you're just all in regardless?
I'm all in regardless. You know, there could be like no NBA players in this draft, and I'd still try to find at least one guy who could maybe make a two-way contract or something. But no, I think the consensus and is correct, and they're correct in the sense that there is no generational talent. There's no obvious top guy. I guess, you know, Alex Saar is probably the closest thing that exists to that. I don't think he's going to end up top on my board, but I get it. I understand why he's starting to become the consensus number one guy. The league is dominated by players who look like him now. I think that that's really what people mean is there's no Wemby, there's no Zion, there's no Cade Cunningham. And then, you know, we were so spoiled last year. Brandon Miller and the Thompson twins and Jairus Walker and so many exciting prospects right behind Wemby. It seems like we used up all our great draft picks or all our great draft prospects for this year, last year. So, you know, GG was supposed to be in this draft. He could have been, the prize that everyone was looking to, but he ended up in last year's draft. So I respect the depth of this draft quite a bit. I think there are some guys late first into the second round who have a really good chance of being productive NBA players. So, at the very top, if you're looking for a guy that's going to change your franchise, you're going to be disappointed. But if you're looking for a guy that I think you can build with and win with and maybe is your third option, maybe fourth option, then you've got a good chance of finding that guy at the top of this draft.
Yeah, it's interesting because I've heard on a couple different podcasts, a lot of guys – you know, Sam Fazzini is a guy from The Athletic who does a lot of draft stuff. And he said something interesting about he doesn't have a guy that's a tier one or tier two for him. It starts at tier three. And a lot of other people or GMs, quote unquote, you never know how true those sources are, right? But there a lot of the stuff that's been saying is that the draft is kind of like if you started at pick six, you started at pick seven, which is interesting. So it's kind of like with the Grizzly strategy being at nine, is it kind of a thing where you're looking for a guy that can fit in and play, or are you kind of looking for the home run a la like 2013 with Giannis in the middle of the first? Like, are you more comfortable with a solid guy that you think can contribute now, or someone who maybe 3 years from now could be that home run type guy?
I think, I think trying to find immediate help in the draft is always going to be really tough. Guys, it's so hard for them to make the transition, even from the G League, to playing significant positive NBA minutes right off the bat. Even if you're an older prospect, it is just asking a lot. Those guys are few and far between, and they're usually not anywhere close to where they'll be, a couple years down the road. So, going into the draft, trying to find immediate help is, it's just not something that it's not really a way I look at the draft. So I think the Grizzlies are in a unique perspective or in a unique situation where they can take a swing on a player because they don't need a rookie to come in and help them. I know there's been a lot of talk about the center position and, hey, can Donovan Clingan come in and start right away? And maybe, I mean, he's maybe one of the few exceptions that actually could contribute a decent amount as a rookie, but that's not. It's not the way a team. You don't want to be relying on Donovan Clingan to be your starting center if you're legitimately trying to win a title. I think you look at what a great way to look at this is kind of what Dallas has done with Derek Lively, right? He's played a lot and he's played big, significant minutes for them, but they still went out and they got Daniel Gafford and they got PJ Washington because you have to have guys who've kind of been there, done that, veterans when you're trying to win right now. So it's not to say that this rookie that the Grizzlies pick at 9 or wherever they end up picking can't help them in some way, but relying on Klingon to just step in and say, "Oh, it's a one for one swap with Steven Adams," that's tough,
We're
man.
set.
Exactly. And so, yeah, I'm more of the swing. I think, not to go too far on this, but we look back at the Zaire Williams pick, and it doesn't look like it's going to work out, right? I mean, it just. At this point, I would be a little surprised if Zaire is anything more than an end of the bench guy in the NBA. But the taking a swing at a guy that is his height, his coordination, and the touch that he has on his shot makes a ton of sense to me. I think they did basically the same thing with GG Jackson, and the returns early are very good. So I have no problem taking swings on these outlier kind of skill, touch, coordination guys, and just seeing how many of them hit. Because all of a sudden, if two, three of these guys hit, I mean, man, you've got the most valuable commodity in basketball, the 6'7" plus ball handler scorer. Everyone wants those. Those are the guys that get the contracts. Those are the guys that, win finals MVP. And so that, to me, that is how I look at the draft. Can I find another one of these guys, like 2013, like a Giannis, right? He went 15 and, no one knew what the heck this guy was. But there will be players from this draft that we don't expect who will end up, making all-star teams and making real impact to winning basketball.
Yeah, it's a great point because I think right now is, I mean, it's not a Grizzlies fan base centric thing. Every fan base does this, right? Especially around draft time, if you got a high draft pick, it's do or die with the pick. And the Grizzlies have been saying for the past couple months, it's a very weird situation because most teams that have the core that they do are not in this position. Like it just does not happen. So it's, everybody wants a guy who can play right away. When I'm with you, I'd rather have a guy who is maybe a G League guy for 2 or 3 years, but the return on him when the core three is, in that prime championship winning window, which is 27 to 30 in that kind of range, then there's somebody who may be able to actually contribute right away. So it's going to get nasty. Like you just go on Twitter today and everybody's fighting over Zach Edey for God knows what's reason. And it's like, we still are a month away from this. Like, let's not start digging the trenches yet and buckling
Right.
down, right? Like, there's so much that can change from this. And that's why I kind of wanted to have you on early because as this kind of a fluid situation moves for us, we know boards and with all the stuff that we see changes over a month. So I do want to do this as just like an introduction to who people that you like for the Grizzlies and your thoughts on them. and then kind of revisit that right when we get up to draft time and kind of see what has changed. And maybe I'll actually do some due diligence and have something to talk about you with back and forth. But with the Grizzlies, if you're doing the needs part for them, is it truly you're addressing the center spot if that's something that falls to you? Or is it something else that you want to see? Another shooter, a bench guy, like another guard? What kind of, if it was needs based, do you think the Grizzlies could kind of fill with this ninth pick?
Yeah, I mean, I think the obvious one is center, and Zach Kleiman, he doesn't give away a lot when he talks. He rarely talks, and when he does, he says a whole lot of nothing for the most part. But he did say at the end of the season that they're going to add a big, that's they have to do it. I don't think it takes, a genius basketball fan to look at the roster and say, hey, it's lacking some size. Right now, Brandon Clark is probably your starting center, and he's 6'8" when he puts shoes on, So, like, if Donovan Clingan is there at nine, I get it. I understand that that may be the perfect intersection of best talent on the board and a guy who just hand in glove fits exactly what you need and what has worked for you well in the past with Steven Adams. So yeah, I think big. This team will forever need shooting, more shooting. Every team needs shooting. So I think there's some pretty good shooters in this class too. So I would definitely think if there's a great shooter on the board at nine, even in the second round with your two picks there, why not roll the dice on a guy who's got a little size who can shoot the ball well, maybe some other warts, and that's why he's in the second round. But I think those two. Yeah, I think size and shooting. I feel like, the playmaking, ball handling, they've got a pretty good grasp on that. Between Smart and Bane and Ja, they've got guys who can really create for themselves. Even Scottie Pippen Jr. did a good job of it in a pinch. He could do it for the Grizzlies next season. So I don't think you have to take that, but I don't think, if that's the top guy on the board, a ball handler type guy, you just take him, because you want to maximize the asset of the pick, and maybe you end up trading that player. And you want that player to be the best player that was available because that's what retains the most value. So, anyways, yeah, to answer your question, I think shooting one, or excuse me, big one, shooting two.
To go on that, should we're getting into some hypotheticals here, which is everybody's favorite. That's why you tune in, right? Should they stay at nine and make that pick? Do you think they should try to be aggressive and move up a couple spots for a guy, or vice versa? Do you think they should go back a little bit because someone always falls, right? Like last year, we talked about I was in love with Cam Whitmore. Like his archetype of player is just a guy I love, and he falls all the way back to what, 20 or whatever it
Yeah.
was. So do you have a preference, I guess, first off, and is there a optimal strategy you think they should use in what we consider more of a weaker draft class?
I think the value of this class is had in, from pick 20 and beyond. So if they could trade back and net, a future pick or two, or a player that they feel like is a playoff starter slash rotation player, then that makes a lot of sense to me. As a guy who loves the draft, it's fun to go up, or it's fun to stay at nine and make the top 10 pick, right? But if I'm being, if I'm being unbiased and just trying to think of where I think you can add the most value, I think that's where it is. I think somewhere in the 20s or 30s is going to be where you're going to be like, man, that was a good pick compared to someone who went maybe 11 or 12. So yeah, I think that's probably where I'd land on that.
That's it. I wouldn't say I've been crazy active trying to find that trade, but like an obvious candidate to me is someone like the Blazers at 14, right? And they've got a lot of, it's young pieces, but Malcolm Brogdon's just kind of sitting there. So like something like a switch 9-14, hey, do you want Zaire, whatever, to match salaries and like, hey, what about Malcolm Brogdon? He's $22 million expiring. It's just another proven guy that would be used to that kind of bench role. Those are the kind of, that's not saying like that's something I'm fighting for, but that's the kind of
Right.
way I've started to think about this draft is, I don't love Robert Williams, but just because of the injury history, but that's kind of the mode that I'm thinking of. Who would want to move up? Because it doesn't feel like everybody's going to talk about trading these picks. Oh, the Hawks should trade number one. Like, I think the number one pick has been traded 3 times in history. You're not going to get the value that you want out of it. And like, I've heard crazy stuff where on the other day with the combine at the beginning, someone on the panel said that the Hawks should trade number one to the Clippers for Paul George. And it's like, what universe is that happening? Like, that's just not going to happen. So, top 10 or at least top probably 6 or 7 picks, they just do not get traded very often.
Right.
I mean, you get the rare ones that's Luka Trey swap. But you don't usually get a guy coming in from the late lottery into 6 or 7. That just doesn't happen. And so it's like, is there value in this draft for people to actually be aggressive that way? That's what, I'm kind of not sure of, is the ideal strategy for the Grizzlies is probably to trade back because you can probably get the same caliber player and pick somebody else up. But are they going to have a partner that's going to be interested in that? And to me, it's got to be someone that's bad, that's building something, that's willing to move in there to try to take if someone falls, right? So that's kind of where I've been moving with this Grizzlies pick, which I hate because I want to sit there and find the best guy, right? And I don't want to be using this strategy, the Patriots strategy where you just trade out and pick more stuff up. But it does feel like kind of the best avenue for this Grizzlies. Who knows if we'll ever have a partner for that.
Right.
But now to the actual players. I assume you have your big board. Is there a Grizz specific, we'll go five, Grizz specific five guys that you're looking at that you think would be ideal for this team?
Yeah, okay. So I did a little research just on the kind of various mock drafts. I think I looked at 7 mock drafts. This was the night or the day after the lottery, just to get a sense of where people are having people selected. What's the pool going to look like for Grizzlies players? So there were 4 guys that never fell to 9: Alex Sarr, Zachary Risacher, Matas Buzelis, and Nikola Topic. So it seems, just based off what the mock drafts say, those 4 probably out of the Grizz range. Every other player in this draft, at least on one mock, was available to the Grizzlies. So that's kind of how I got my pool of guys that I think at least are somewhat realistic for the Grizzlies. So
Can
my
I ask you
5,
something real quick?
yeah.
Now, Risacher, do you think he could fall? Like, is he like a fallout candidate? Because you're starting to, stuff starts to say today that he can't really create. He's kind of a stand in the corner guy. He's got good athleticism and size, but like, does he kind of give you a Cam Whitmore type, which Whitmore is more medical stuff, right? But
Right.
like, does he kind of give you that feel of a guy that might be a slide candidate just early looking in?
Absolutely. I thought it was frankly wild that ESPN kept putting him as the number one pick. I mean, I think people, the casual, NBA fan, they want to look at ESPN's mock and think, hey, this is a good sense of what's going to happen and an accurate reflection on, how these guys should be ranked. And I get it, Gavoni, he's an intel guy, right? I don't know that he's a smart basketball guy, but he does his rankings based on what he hears around the league from various sources. And so I guess that's what he was hearing from Risacher or, on him. I mean, I think the guy's like a 3-and-D wing that you could find a similar version of him like in the 20s. So yes, I think he could slide, but maybe people buy the creation stuff. He just hasn't shown it, and he frankly hadn't shot the ball that well recently. So he's going to be a lot lower for me than what the mainstream mocks have him. So yes, to your point, yes, absolutely, I could see him sliding. So, all right. How do you want me to go one by one, or you want me to just list all five and we can talk about the group?
Whichever, however feels comfortable to you.
All
I'll
right.
leave that
We'll
open.
just we'll go one by one. We'll start with probably my favorite guy, the guy that I would say is the leader in the clubhouse to be my number one player in this draft, and that's Ron Holland from the G League Ignite. So Ron Holland reminds me a lot of Jaylen Brown when he was at Cal, and he had a lot of similar positives and negatives, frankly. Like Jaylen Brown was this really good athlete, really good defender, really good at using his body, getting to where he wanted, and the shot just wasn't quite there. And he got to the NBA, and the shot slowly started to come around, where now he is an excellent 3-point shooter. And I know that, he gets clowned a little bit because he is one of the highest paid players in NBA history, and people think he's not worth that, whatever. But if you get Jaylen Brown number one in this draft, you did a really good job. You feel really good about that. So to me, Holland, like, I think when you're evaluating him, you have to have in the back of your mind that the whole time this guy was, in high school in Texas, and whole time he's playing AAU, he was basically a power forward. He was very rarely put on the wing, asked to handle any sort of creation load. He goes to G League Ignite, has nearly a 30 usage. He's dribbling the ball all the time. The ball's constantly in his hands because they don't really have a point guard there. Last year they had Scoot Henderson, who kind of set everything up for him. They didn't really have that this year. And so I think that the offensive stuff was not great. The shot was not great, but he shot well over 70% from the foul line. I don't think it's a touch problem. And the defense is just, it's really incredible. Like on ball, off ball, he is just, I think, I mean, a basketball sicko in the best way possible. Like he just wants the ball more than you do, and he's going to go get it, And so if he can be like a 35% 3-point shooter, I think the guy will make all-star teams. And like ESPN's mock has Ron Holland, I believe, going at 10. So he's available there for the Grizzlies at 9. And if he's on the board at number 9, I am running, I'm writing the name on the card and I'm turning it in as fast as I can. So that's number one. Ron, any have you do you have any Ron Holland thoughts?
So I jotted down my personal kind of Grizzlies one, and I've only focused on a handful of people, and Ron Holland is number one for me.
Okay.
I mean, it's just like the nose for the ball thing is like what stands out the most to me, and there's a 4-inch shorter version of that in the playoffs right now in Josh Hart, and
Right.
everybody freaking loves him, right? Like everybody'd want that dude on your team. This guy's 3 inches taller version.
Yeah.
And more athletic. And I don't really get why the cycle changed on him through the whole year. Like, 'cause he was number one coming in, right? The number
Yes.
one prospect. I know he had that injury and he kind of missed a little bit, but I don't understand why that injury would drop him 9 spots. I never understood it. Like, he's a top guy for me. I'm not worried about the shooting. Like, he does everything else that wins.
Right.
And so I'll buy on the theoretical potential of what he could be as a shooter. I know I can bank on absolutely everything, every other corner, facet of his game. So he was number one for me. And that's
Okay.
probably about the only thing we have in common, if I had to
Okay.
guess.
Okay. All right. We'll see. We'll see. I've got I tried to throw one surprise in there. I guess I'll save that for the end and just kind of run through maybe some of the more traditional guys. So I
Sure.
guess next up for me would be Reed Sheppard from Kentucky.
Sure.
I think a lot of people are probably pretty familiar with him. We live in SEC country, and we probably watch a decent amount of Kentucky basketball. So, he's, it's funny. I was watching him and I was starting to get kind of tired and I was getting ready to go to bed. And I pull out my notes app and I just typed in Reed Sheppard is special. And then I put the date on it. And then I just went to bed and fell asleep. So I wanted to make sure that I wasn't so tired that I didn't forget the stuff I was watching. I went back and I rewatched the Mississippi State game, that he scored 32 points and he took like,
Yeah.
I'm not going to get the number right. It was like 15 or 17 shots. It was ridiculous how
Amazing.
efficient he was. And
Yeah.
then, hits the game winner and just incredible, man. He's blocking shots. He's deflecting passes. He's scoring off the dribble. He's finding guys. He's coming, off a movement to shoot threes, spot up threes off the dribble. Like, it's the 50% plus from three is not a fluke. I mean, the guy is, his body is perfectly in line. It is balanced all the time. Every shot is the exact same as the last one. And I'm just a fan. I think, like, worst case scenario, he could have like a JJ Redick career, but I buy all the creation stuff with him too. So I'm in. I just think he's, he's short and that sucks, but I think he can play.
How much of, just of a caveat, how much does like combine measurement stuff, is that a little bit of a factor to you? Does it matter a whole lot, or you're just kind of like, okay, you can log it away, right? Like if we were talking about just pure measurement stuff, we never draft Desmond Bane, right? That's probably
Yeah,
why he
right.
drops to us at 30, is the measurement stuff. Like, so is it a bigger deal to you? Like, do you think people overthink that analytically for a player?
It matters some. I mean, it's a data point to me. Like, you've got, the stats, you've got the film, you've got the measurements. It's one thing to consider. I wouldn't, like when Stephon Castle measured in at 6'2¼". I was like, whoa, that does change my evaluation because I thought he was 4 inches taller than that. And turns out he is 4 inches taller than that. So something crazy like that, yes. But Sheppard was one I was kind of interested in, and Rob Dillingham. I was really concerned Rob Dillingham was not going to be 6 feet tall with shoes on, but he was 6'1" without shoes on. And that's perfect. Like, I'm good. Rob can play in the NBA. We're good. Mark Sears, I think, came in at like 5'10½". Mark Sears probably can't play in the NBA then, So it matters some, but not like, I think too many people overvalue it. And I actually think the Grizzlies have been one of the best teams at taking advantage of that, because I think Bane slipped almost entirely because he was older and because he had a negative wingspan. But everything else about the guy said this is a good NBA player. So yeah, it matters, but it's not the end of the world,
This is like the time where we overthink it. We just start looking at raw numbers. But my second one is Tyler Smith. I can't help myself. 6'9", lefty, can stroke it, spot up guy. He's not really doing anything else right now, but at least I know he's going to do one thing, and that's going to stand in the corner on the wing and knock down threes that are kicked out to him. So he's, from what I've seen so far, he's not like an overly explosive athlete, even though he tested pretty well on that kind of stuff, which is why I'm like, does that kind of stuff matter that much? Because he just doesn't look in game explosive. But yeah, at the spot we're at, I'm just gonna roll the dice on a 6'9" left stroke like that guy has.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a power forward who can absolutely stroke it, Tyler was a guy I really hoped to watch him play when the Ignite came to play the Hustle, and he ended up having an injury and he didn't get to play. I would have loved to have seen him in person, but I'm a fan. He's going to be top 20 for me, no question. All right, my number three is the guy I just said, Stephon Castle. Thankfully, he is not 6'2¼". He's 6'5½" without shoes on. So Castle is a he's a unique, nuanced, interesting prospect. I mean, there's a lot of stuff I think you have to take into consideration when you're talking about him, because I think he took quite a reduced role on that UConn team and did not fully get to show everything that he did when he was coming up in AAU and some of the high school stuff. And I think that there is a little bit of a valid question of how scalable of a prospect is he, because he seems to do his best work when he has the ball in his hand and can kind of create for himself. But I buy the defense. I buy just kind of, he's got that dog in him type deal. Just he's kind of wired a little bit differently. And we've already seen him take a step back and be a winning player on the team that won the national championship. So if all else fails for Stephon Castle, I buy the role player upside for him. But I think there's like a little bit, like, I don't know, a 5% chance he might be Jimmy Butler. And that 5% chance is worth it for me to just draft him ninth in this draft. So that's why he's going to be high for me.
To add on with UConn, is UConn maybe a little bit now at a much higher level than Kentucky, but is there a little bit of a system kind of thing? Is that going to be the knock you think on UConn players coming out? I mean, Jordan Hawkins came out and he didn't really do a lot with the Pelicans. Now they were going for a playoff spot, right? Like you said at the beginning, you're not going to play a rookie a whole lot for that. Do you think there's like Kentucky? We always bank on the Kentucky guys because the system's awful, and we know that they're just better than what they are. Do you think UConn's good system puts these guys, pigeon these guys, or pigeonhole these guys into roles? Do you think that's going to like hurt them a little bit? And I guess that could benefit the Grizzlies if Castle falls and he is what, we all hope he is. But do you think that could kind of hurt some of these guys?
It's a totally fair question. I think you could turn it around and say it might help them because I do think UConn runs an incredibly complex system, and these guys were able to thrive in a not a standard college basketball system. I think Hurley it should go coach in the NBA one day. I mean, I think he can clearly do it. I think no. And I don't know. I mean,
Well, the reason I ask is because, I'm always wary of guys coming out that said, "Oh, I can do more than what I did." Right? And
totally fair.
usually it just is not the case. They're just selling. But Castle is the one where it's like, in the role that you were in, there's probably a likelihood you could have played at Villanova and averaged 18 or 20, right? So it's just like that's the only reason I ask is because it does feel like there's more to his game. But I'm always wary of guys who are like, oh, I didn't show, I remember a couple of years ago, it was one of those bigs from one of those mid majors who said, well, I shoot threes, but they never let me. And it's like, we never heard of that guy ever again. I don't think he ever shot a three in the league. So it's like, it's just something it goes in the back of my mind, when it's mentioned. That's why I was kind of curious what your thoughts on that.
It's totally fair, and I think with like Castle, he's a freshman, and so we don't have like multiple years of this exact same thing, right? That was really what is tough about scouting these freshmen. So I do my best to find, like some, if they played on the EYBL, you can find some of their tape out there. And just like, it's a much less structured environment than even college is. But what did they look like before they got put into this system that is UConn basketball? And I do think Castle has more to his game than Hurley allowed him to show. And, it's not a knock on Dan Hurley at all. I mean, the guy's job is to win, and he just won a national championship. So his job.
Back to back.
It, exactly. So his job is not to only feature Stephon Castle and only get Stephon Castle to the NBA and showcase his talents, right? So, no, but your point of like, be wary of the guy that is like, oh, in practice, I actually shoot 80% from three. It's like, really? Well, then why are you shooting, 25% on the season,
It's
so
like the
yeah,
Zach
I
Edey effect. It's Zach Edey's
exactly.
shooting and combine just like, oh, he can stretch the floor now. It's like, all right, guys, come on.
Totally fair.
Let's
Yeah,
not fall for
totally
this.
fair.
But my third is the reason I asked about Rizashare is because this is my third. Is I thought he was him and Dillingham are kind of like my 1A, 1B on guys I think could slide. And so if Rizashare fell to nine, I feel more comfortable at that, even though I'm not in love with the player. We already described that, so we don't have to go through it, but he's my third currently.
If he's there, he make specifically for the Grizzlies, 3-and-D wings, you can't have enough of them. So I get it. He's not a guy I'd take one, but I'd gladly take him nine.
And French Zaire Williams, right? We
Oh
can never
gosh.
use my
Yes, please. Can we
Fridge
find a
V.
Serbian one? You know, can
All
Oh.
right,
All
you're
right.
fourth.
Number four, I'm going to talk about everybody's favorite, Donovan Clingan.
Sure.
Clingan was a guy I was extremely interested in last cycle, and I thought it was kind of crazy that he went back to school because I think if he had come out last cycle, he still is probably a top 20 pick. And you know, he took the gamble, and it has clearly paid off because I think some people have him as high as number two in this class. And I am interested to see what he does on draft night because I'm not, you know, I think I've said this a million times. I'm not a guy who talks about needs and, you know, team specific needs. What does a team need when it comes to draft? To me, the draft is a talent acquisition proposition, and then you can go fill your needs in free agency and through trades. But for Klingon and for bigs specifically, if you already have established bigs, you really are only playing one guy that's Donovan Klingon's size significant minutes. It's very rare that you see kind of the twin tower looks that you have like in Minnesota, or something like that. It just don't happen that often. So if I'm looking at the top 10 and I'm looking at landing spots for Donovan Klingon, like it seems like Atlanta's taking Sarr. Washington is interesting. I actually think that that would make a ton of sense. I just don't know if they want to take him that high. Then you go, you know, Rockets have Şengün. Spurs have Wemby, so that's two picks. Detroit used a high pick on Jalen Duren. Hornets have Mark Williams. Blazers, are they ready to just say we messed up really bad with DeAndre Ayton? We're taking this guy. I don't know. They still owe him a ton of money. And that gets you to the Grizzlies, who, yeah, makes a ton of sense for him to be there. So I think it's totally, you know, within the realm of possibility that he's there at nine. Even though, like I said, a lot of people are starting to rank him as one of the five best prospects in this class.
Yeah, that's, I mean, just a FYI, I haven't made it yet, but I believe you can bet him to go number one at 240 to one, or
Oof.
maybe, what is it? Maybe it's 24 to one. I can't remember. And I'm looking at like, could the Hawks take him one? I could see it. Like, it's a
It's not
very
crazy.
Hawks, it's a Hawks thing to do, right?
Yeah.
Capella getting older. He seems, well, okay, he plays like 60, 70 games a year, so he's not broken down, but he's on that trajectory, right? And you bring in Behemoth to help with Trey. I mean, they have said in the past they prefer defense. I'm just saying, I'm intrigued by the bet.
It's
I
totally
might wait a
possible.
couple weeks because I don't think that number will really move, but I'm not certain that Sar is the guy that's going one. Like, I refuse to believe this early in this type of draft that he's definitely going number one.
I agree.
So, Klingon is a wild card first pick for me. I think it could happen. We'll
I
see how much I
totally agree.
invest in that idea. But
Right.
my fourth is, I can't pronounce the first name correctly yet, I don't think, but I think it's Tijuan Saloon.
Yeah.
That
I think that's
is
right.
okay. I thought I heard it. I tried to listen for something in like some highlights or something to make sure I had it right. But I don't, is he French as well? I can't remember. He might be
Either
playing in a French league.
French or Belgian. For some reason, I want to say Belgian,
Okay.
but I could be wrong.
But he's my other guy that you just, let's throw the dice. Let's see what happens in 2, 3 years from now.
He's
So,
French. Yes, he's from Paris, France. So,
okay.
I tweeted it the night lottery. I always have this tier that is if the Grizzlies are in, then I'm in, and he is in that tier. Absolutely. They like him. I'm in. Let's do it. Let's go for it. Because I see it. I mean, there's the flashes. Like you put on his highlight tape, you're like, wait, why is this guy not the number one pick? And then you watch a full game, you're like, oh, okay, I
Oh,
got, you know,
okay.
still a bit of a work in progress. But man, the high-end highlights are like, whoa, is this like French Giannis or something? It's impressive.
It's very enticing for if you're going to roll the dice, which the Grizzlies are just
Yes.
in a prime spot to do something like
Yes.
that. And you're fifth to round
Number
you out.
five. A bit of a surprise, maybe, because I don't think this guy is up really even in the lottery yet. I think he will be. Is Dayron Holmes from
Okay.
Dayton. I love Dayron Holmes. I just watched the stuff. I watched four or five of his games over the weekend, and I'm just in. I just in this draft, I think if you end up with a guy that you think can be a starter in the playoffs, then you should take that player very, very high. And that's what I think about Dayron Holmes. I think he's got the requisite size. I thought the measures came in great. He's got over a 9 foot standing reach. He is an excellent athlete. I think he can play center. He's a little bit undersized for it, but not, he's not like Brandon Clark or anything crazy like that. Strong, like understands leverage, just rarely gets beat on the block, gets the position he wants. I think he's got a chance to be a really good defender. He blocks shots. I think he can switch out on the perimeter. Like, he's just everything you want in a modern big. And I think he's that, rare intersection of requisite, side to side movement, lateral movement to switch out on guys, but also the strength to be able to hold his ground against some of the bigger guys he's going to have to guard in the NBA. And when you add that he can dribble a little bit, he can shoot a little bit, he creates for himself a little bit, like that's a player you take very high, in my opinion. So
Yeah.
Dayron Holmes, if that's the name they call it, nine, I get it, and I'm in.
That would be a wild one. That would probably a lot of people would question, but you're right. It's like it's to the point with Holmes where it's like, how much do you overthink this? Like, this
Right.
guy can clearly play basketball. He's been doing it for however many years at Dayton, and nobody there has been able to figure him out.
Right.
He's still super productive. Like, how much do we just we're overthinking what we're looking at here.
Right.
And talking about overthinking, my fifth one, it was Tristan Da Silva for a while, but
Okay.
I bumped him for someone who should not be here. And I just can't help myself.
All
It's
right.
Jared McCain.
Nice
That's my
shooter.
wild card. That's the one that's probably going to change for me. Now there's probably two or three here that's going to change. Tyler Smith's going to stay. I'm just going to tell you that right now. He's not going to change from here to the next month, but Jared McCain is, I think he's, I don't like the height, right? It's not ideal, but he does remind me a lot of Tyus Jones. And I think he's super competitive. And I think he's confident. And I think you have to be confident to paint your nails like that. Like, come on.
Totally.
You've got to be uber confident in yourself and comfortable to do that. Get heckled for it and still go out and perform. There's something there mentally and mental toughness. So I just like a competitor and he can flat out shoot it. I think he's probably not on par as Reed Sheppard, but maybe just a little notch below. But I would put him in one of the top shooters in this draft if you were making a list. So he's my wild card fifth right now. And he would be a shock at nine. And I don't think like Grizz Twitter, like it would just fold and collapse in on itself like a dying star
I
if we
know.
took him not
I know.
but
So I've seen some people say that he's a streaky shooter, and I understand. I get that, but streaky shooters aren't over 40% on good volume over the course of a season, and he was. He is a legitimately knocked down, very good shooter. So I like him a lot. I'm with you. I wish he and Reed Sheppard were both at least 6'5", but they're not, and I still think they can play. It would not deter me from drafting them. I'm a fan.
Chip, I think that'll do it for round one. Now, like we said, a month from now, we're going to try to have you back on. Now, I know this is you've got a regular job working your normal hours, and now you're going to be doing podcasts probably and shows for the next month.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you coming on and taking your time. Then hopefully it works out in a month. We can get back together and kind of see where we're at if anything has changed for you. So Shout out to the people. Tell them where they can find you. They need to be following you. You posting all the stuff that you're observing. People will comment saying you're wrong. And that's the
Yeah.
fun, most fun part of it, right? And then
Of
they just
course.
the dumbest reason why you're wrong. I love every second of it when I see it,
Yeah,
especially with like people with Bluff City Media, Sean Coleman, people like that that post stuff like that. Where can people find you at, Chip?
Chip Williams Jr. on the website formerly known as Twitter. That's really where I post most of my stuff. So yeah, no, look. Anytime, man. I love talking hoops with you. It's always my pleasure. So yeah, it will be incredibly interesting, 4 or 5 weeks from now to go back, see who we liked at this time, study it for a month more. I'll talk myself in and out of 20 guys by that point, and I'll probably have an entire new five for you when we do this again.
Can't wait for it. Well, that's Chip, the Grizz Draft Father. I'm trying to get that coined for you. I don't know
I
if
love it.
I don't know if it's catchy enough, Grizz Draft Father. We'll work on it, but I'll workshop it with Daniel and other people. But thanks, Chip. We'll be back next week for a normal episode. Kobe will be back. I'm sure we'll just be talking about playoffs, but a lot coming up. So thanks, Chip, for showing up, and we'll see you guys next week.